Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Howdy, folks. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio, your hayseed in Wyoming, bringing you the Cowboys take. And hello to all of you from Canada to the Gulf, from the Atlantic to the Pacific. Big show today, and we're going to get started without delay. We're going to be talking about our historical story, 1937 to 1940. And you go, well, what does that have to do with anything that's going on now? It has everything to do with what's going on right now, as you shall see in the rest of the story. We're going to be talking about election fraud. I'm going to bring you a compendium, a rat-a-tat-tat, so to speak, of election fraud findings from around the country and tell you what's going on there, because the 2022 election, folks, is right around the corner, and we better win. I mean, we better win. I'm going to bring you, as I promised, a organizational structure that you can start implementing with your family, with your neighborhood, with your community, your town, your city, your county. And we're going to elaborate on that each and every week for the next several weeks. It'll be posted under the Take Action button on the website, on therightsideradio.com. Post on that, you can take the outline. We'll be adding to that outline as time goes on. And you need to get motivated. You need to get off the couch. I mean, if you're not pissed off enough to start taking action, well, maybe this show will be the final catalyst for you. And then we're going to bring you our rat-a-tat-tat. We'll see how much of that we actually get to in this show with all the stuff we have to cover. And within the rat-a-tat-tat, we're going to have our, you know, our COVID crumbles. I'm going to kind of combine the two in this show. Yes, COVID crumbling. You know, I really like that. Let's get started, shall we? Let me bring you a quote from George Orwell, that prescient writer. He wrote 1984 in 1949. Wow, how is that for foretelling things? Quote, "The past was erased. The erasure was forgotten. The lie became the truth. There was truth, and then there was untruth. And if you clung to the truth, even against the whole world, you were not mad." And now let me bring you a quote from one of the founders, Benjamin Franklin. "He who dares not offend cannot be honest." Let's talk about what was happening in 1937. Let's start our historical story. You probably didn't know that a minor skirmish between the Chinese and the Japanese troops at what was called the Marco Polo Bridge near Peiping, China, July 7th, 1937, quickly escalated into the Second Sino-Japanese War, which actually raged from 1937 to 1945. Basically, Japan quickly overpowered Chinese forces and controlled all of northern China. As 1937 drew to a close, the hostilities between China and Japan raged on with huge atrocities on either side, particularly by the Japanese, and therein lies the enmity today between China and Japan, and the fear each has of the other. At the same time, Spain was being torn apart by a civil war, and it threatened to turn into a general continental war. In 1937, Italy joined Germany and Japan in what was called the Anti-Comintern Pact. Meanwhile, Germany is building up its armaments. Adolf Hitler is in firm control of Germany after all sorts of escapades early to gain power. And in the United States, there was all sorts of public support for the adoption of a constitutional amendment that would have required a popular vote as a prerequisite to a declaration of war by Congress. President Roosevelt and Secretary of State Hull were adamantly opposed to this. On January 10th, believe it or not, the proposal was voted on by the House of Representatives, and it was rejected, but by the narrowest of margins, 209 to 188. You know, Roosevelt and Hull were trying to keep the peace over in Europe. They were trying to keep America out of a war. But they knew that there were storm clouds brewing. They tried to increase defense spending, particularly for the Navy. And as is always the case, even today, Doubt was expressed that the proposed naval increases were really necessary for the defense of the United States, and senators and representatives thought that the contemplated naval increases would somehow kind of lead to more conflict rather than avoiding conflict. Does this sound familiar, by the way? The secretary conferred with German Ambassador Dieckhoff January 14, 1938, and he told the German ambassador that the supreme issue of the time was whether or not the principles that were kind of the foundation of international law were going to be upheld, or whether the Europe and the world was going to drift into a law of armies, so to speak. On March 11th, 1938, this is just literally less than 2 months after this meeting between Hull and the German ambassador, Hitler sends his armed forces into Austria, which, by the way, were welcomed by most Austrians, kind of like the Ukrainians who believe Russia is really their mother country. So too did 3 or 4 million Austrians believe that Germany was their mother country. And he annexed Austria. And it was like overnight. There was no resistance whatsoever. In the following months, following the seizure of Austria by Germany, obviously tensions were going berserk in Europe. All the armies were mustering of all the various parties. New alliances were being formed, which proved to be dangerous, in fact, lethal in the coming years and months. And the Nazis had started their kind of ruthless persecution of minorities, particularly the Jews or any non-Aryan peoples, in both Austria and Germany. In the summer of 1938, tensions between Germany and Czechoslovakia mounted. By the way, Czechoslovakia had a 400,000-man army with almost 500 tanks at that time. It was a powerful European force. And Hitler was bent on securing his territorial designs on what was called the Sudetenland, which was part of Czechoslovakia, the mountainous part of Czechoslovakia. And he really didn't care if he was risking a general war, because nothing had happened to him when he took Austria. I mean, and he had taken several other states, Moldavia, and zero consequences from the rest of the Europeans or the Americans. And Hitler played his cards brilliantly. And at the 11th hour, when almost all hope of preventing a general European war was gone, the heads of government of Great Britain, France, Germany, and Italy agreed to meet at Munich in a last-minute effort to avoid war. Oh, yeah, to avoid the war. They reached an agreement on September 29, 1938, that Sudetenland of Czechoslovakia would simply be handed over to Germany. It was called the Four Power Pact. And believe it or not, neither Russia nor Czechoslovakia were even invited to the conference in Munich. And the architect of this capitulation, of this appeasement, was British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain. And he returns to England, and everybody's cheering for him. And he had that famous line that he had achieved peace in our time. Ah, well, you know, appeasing tyrants never brings you peace, folks. Never brings you peace. So Hitler takes control of Prague, Czechoslovakia, on March 15th, 1939. They seize the entire Czech armaments industry, all their tank production lines, disbanded the Czech army, and, of course, took all the Czech military equipment. I mean, basically fueling his ever-increasing military expansion. In April of 1939, Britain institutes conscription for men aged 20 to 21, single men and single women. It was the first time there was ever a draft in England, and, of course, the liberals went crazy. Gee, where have we heard this before? In Czechoslovakia, Hitler installs a guy by the name of Emil Hacka. And he's this puppet president. Does this kind of remind you of Belarus and Czechistan? Oh, yeah, it just might. Wait till we get to the rest of the story. And basically, this new puppet leader of Czechoslovakia hands over the rest of Czechoslovakia to Hitler. So now Hitler has designs on Poland. And the reason he has designs on Poland is a great port and military base in Poland. Ha, huh. Does this sound familiar? You know, Sevastopol, the Crimea? Well, this was called Donetsk, and the port was called Danzig, and it was a free state run by the Nazis under the auspices of the League of Nations. Does this kind of sound like Crimea to you? And Adolf Hitler insists that the city were sooner or later returned to Germany. That's a quote. Back in 1937, A year after the emergence of the Berlin-Rome axis, Adolf Hitler and Benito Mussolini, together they attend Wehrmacht maneuvers, and they sign a pact, a non-aggression pact, and an alliance pact, shortly thereafter. On March 15, 1939, German troops occupy Bohemia and Moravia, which is kind of adjunct provinces to Czechoslovakia. On March 22nd, Nazi Germany strong-arms Lithuania into returning a major district of that country, the Memel district, to Nazi Germany. Nothing is done by the Allies other than soft talk and pratter. The Polish government refuses to subordinate the country to Nazi Germany, and Adolf Hitler begins to direct his generals to plan for war with Poland. Fall Weiss, which is called Case White in English, was the Nazi war plan for the invasion of Poland. It was completed in April 1939 and scheduled to be implemented on September 1, 1939. And it called for a three-front attack that would result in the capture of Warsaw. On April 7th, Italy invades the small Adriatic nation of Albania, and the Italians capture the capital in one day. And Spain signs the Anti-Comintern Pact, aligning itself with Japan, Nazi Germany, and Italy. In China, the Japanese have taken Peking, and they have changed its name to Beijing. Now you know how Beijing got its name. 1939, Hungary withdraws from the League of Nations under pressure from Germany. France and Britain pledge that they'll support Greece and Romania if Adolf Hitler attacks them. And on April 28th, Hitler announces he'll no longer honor the non-aggression pact Nazi Germany had signed with Poland in 1934. On May 3rd, Maxim Litvinov, and he was the Soviet Union's People's Commissars for Foreign Affairs and a staunch supporter of kind of collective security, he's replaced by a guy by the name of Molotov. Now you know where the Molotov cocktail name came from. And this move paves the way for a Soviet-German alliance later in the year. On May 5th, Poland thumbs its nose at Nazi Germany again. And on May 11th, Japan attacks the Soviet Union from the borders of the Soviet Union and China. On May 17th, Norway, Sweden, and Finland reject Nazi Germany's offer of a non-aggression pact. On May 22nd, Benito Mussolini's foreign minister, and by the way, his son-in-law, you know, the remember our historical story on tyrants? Well, you know, nepotism is part of the tyrant game. They resign the Pact of Steel with German representatives in Berlin. Germany signs a non-aggression pact with Denmark, and the U.S. does not extend its 1911 commercial treaty with Japan. I mean, you can see the winds of war picking up, the drums of conflict beginning to beat. May 31st through August 2nd, Winston Churchill, who replaced Neville Chamberlain as prime minister, is trying to put together a British-Russian alliance, which is declined by Joseph Stalin, mainly because Joseph Stalin had designs on Poland just like Hitler did. In August, Nazi SS troopers obtained 150 concentration camp prisoners. They dress them in Polish army uniforms, and then they shoot them. The bodies are used as planted evidence of Polish aggression against Germany along the border. And Hitler uses the fictional skirmish, the Red Flag, as a pretext for war. On August 2nd, Albert Einstein signs a letter to Roosevelt stating that scientists have discovered how to create a nuclear chain reaction, which could lead to, I quote, extremely powerful bombs of a new type, unquote. This embarks the U.S. atomic bomb project in the United States. Persecution of Jews and non-Aryans are now at full peak throughout Nazi-controlled Europe, which is rapidly expanding with not a whimper from the Allies. The Allies are so scared of upsetting Adolf Hitler and so worried about war that Jews begin to be denied access to Cuba, to the United States, and to Canada. Do you remember that book called The German Lady about the ship St. Louis? This is right when it happened, May of 1939. On August 24th, Roosevelt sends a personal appeal to Adolf Hitler, asking him to address the Polish issue through diplomatic channels. On August 25th, Poland and Britain sign a treaty in which they promise mutual assistance. On August 27th, Britain ups its calls for enlistment of all men ages 20 and 21. Also on August 27th, the German Henkel HE-178, the world's first jet aircraft, makes its maiden voyage, reaching a top speed, believe it or not, of 403 miles per hour. On August 29th, Adolf Hitler agrees to sit down at the bargaining table with Polish leaders, but then reneges. And Nazi Germany insists that the time for negotiation with Warsaw has now passed. Quote, "We have been put off by the Polish side with feeble subterfuges and empty declarations." On September 1, Germany invades Poland. A few days later, France and Britain declare war on Germany. And on September 17th, although it's not talked about much in the history books, Poland is invaded by Russia, and it's invaded from what is now Ukraine, at that time part of the Soviet Union. The Polish army was large, but it was not prepared for modern war. In fact, more than half of its troops were still horseback-mounted cavalry troops, standing no chances against the blitzkrieg of German tanks. And even though it had the fifth largest armed forces in Europe, it had not called them up once again for fear of getting, you know, Germany upset. And basically, Poland was toast within a matter of weeks. The entire war with Poland lasted 6 weeks. The United States rescinded the Neutrality Act, which was supposed to insulate it from any foreign conflicts, and began to be the major supplier of war materials and war goods to both its Pacific allies and its European allies. And then, of course, just about a year and a few months after the invasion of Poland and the beginnings of World War II, Pearl Harbor, December 7th, 1941. And then we were in it with both feet on two continents and two oceans. And now the rest of the story. The alliances back then were ever-shifting and permeable and bewildering to all the players and the actors on the world stage. The appeasement factor, the wish to avoid war at all costs, notwithstanding the eventual result being war, was in play. If you sit back just for a moment, substitute the names of countries now for the names of countries then, and let's go through this together. Pretend that Russia today is Germany of the 1930s. Pretend that China is Russia. China today is Russia of the 1930s. You know, the shadowy ally like Russia was to Germany back then, as is China is to Russia right now. Think about the puppet governments that were mucking up the works. Back then, Czechoslovakia, Moldavia, and now Belarus and Czechistan. Think about Ukraine and pretend that Ukraine is to current times what Poland was to the 1930s. And then think about China again. China is today what the 1930s Japan was then, with all sorts of territorial and domination motivations. History repeats if you let it, folks. And what we're seeing unfold is a repeat of history from 75 years ago. Let's talk about election fraud. You know, the big lie, as the left likes to call it. Did you know that Mayorkas, what a peach, the head of DHS, has just published a paper? So anybody who brings up election fraud from 2020, folks, or anybody who has stood up and beat their chests over Fauci and COVID and all the nonsense that's been going on there, we are now domestic terrorists, I want you to know. I'm going to tell you more about that next week. It's unbelievable. But on the election fraud front, let's talk about a whole bunch of evidence. And let me tell you that this just scratches the surface. So the Wisconsin Office of Special Counsel has just released its second report. I brought you the first one last week. 100% voting rates in many nursing homes in Brown, Dane, Kenosha, Milwaukee, and Racine counties, and including residents who were close to death or previously declared incompetent. In Arizona, you have Maricopa County. Maricopa County was ordered by a court and agreed to do an audit of their election, including of their Dominion voting machines. However, they haven't done it. Months and months and months have gone by. The Arizona Senate is about to pass a resolution that finds that the board has failed to comply with the court order and the subpoena that the Arizona legislature levied on the Maricopa County commissioners. And if they don't comply, they may be facing jail time. I'm glad to see that maybe somebody's going to be held accountable. And by the way, part of what they've demanded is access to voting machines and all 2.1 million ballots cast in the election. Remember, Trump lost that election by 16,000 votes. Wisconsin, Just the News, which is Solomon, great reporter, over the last 15 months of reporting, listen to this, foreign intrusion. Okay, two Iranian nationals successfully hacked into a state computer election system. Oh, this is great. I'm glad we're spending all our time on critical race training and all that nonsense while we leave our cybersecurity, including to our elections, wide open. You know, big old barn door. Enter here, screw with our hay, also known as votes. They stole 100,000 voter registrations. And they waged a cyber intimidation campaign that targeted GOP voters and got out the vote on the Democratic side. Then bribery. You'll love this, right? Millions of dollars in donations to election administrators in five Democrat-heavy municipalities in Wisconsin. Ah, our buddy Zuck from Facebook. And I told you about this 2 weeks ago. The Center for Tech and Civic Life, the two organizations that he used to launder the money, violated state anti-bribery laws, according to the special counsel, and corrupted election practices, and turned the public election authorities, who leaned left, of course, into liberal get-out-the-vote activists. Terrific. And then illegal ballot harvesting in Wisconsin. This is also from the special prosecutor, Gableman. A vote collection operation, nursing homes, and in poor and homeless areas of cities within those five counties. Then we have ballot harvesting in Georgia. Okay, they've started criminal investigations. And this is centered around liberal activists who were engaged in illegal ballot harvesting, collecting ballots from voters, and then delivering them in violation of Georgia state law. True the Vote, which is an excellent outfit. I mean, they are on this voter integrity thing. They rock. They have filed a complaint. And they say that a man, which is identified as John Doe, has now admitted his role and identified the nonprofits who funded it. You know, the nonprofits, folks, the NGOs, you know, funded by Soros and funded by left dark donors. And people were paid $10 per ballot to deliver ballots to these ballot collection boxes, which were also funded by our friend Zuck at Facebook and his wife Chan. They've taken cell phone location pings, and they have put together a map. In fact, you might have seen it in the previews to Dinesh D'Souza's upcoming film. Listen to this. Cell phone location records pinpoint alleged harvesting by 240 different activist harvesters, who in some cases made 20 to 30 trips with bundles of ballots to collection boxes between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. in the morning. I mean, do the math on this. Remember, the vote differential in Georgia was 10,000 votes. 50,000 Arizona ballots are called into question by an audit by the Arizona Senate. And those 50,000 ballots also cast in the 2020 election included people who were dead and voters who cast ballots from residences they had left. They were no longer even residents in Arizona or in the voting district in which they dropped their vote, so to speak. Illegal ballot drop boxes. A Wisconsin judge has ruled that widespread use of ballot drop boxes was unlawful, and the state Supreme Court in Wisconsin has let that ruling stand. So, too bad for the left in the upcoming 2022 elections in that regard. Foreign voters on Texas voting rolls. 12,000 non-citizens are suspected of illegally registering to vote, and many of them did vote. They've identified at least 600 cases in which illegal aliens cast ballots in the federal elections. Foreign voters were found on Georgia rolls. An audit by the Georgia Secretary of State, not that he's any peach, has identified more than 2,000 foreigners who tried to register to vote in the state. Unconstitutional mail-in voting. This is in Pennsylvania. The Pennsylvania Commonwealth Court has ruled that state law that opened the door to no-excuse mail-in voting was unconstitutional. Mail-in voting, according to the court, can only be enacted by a constitutional amendment. 2.5 million votes were cast with no-excuse mail-in voting in Pennsylvania in 2020. The margin in Pennsylvania was about 80,000. Votes. Non-citizen voters. The Gableman investigation, going back to Wisconsin. It seems that the Wisconsin Election Commission They just forgot. You know, what's our job here? Let's get another cup of coffee. They forgot to record non-citizens in the WSVOTE voter database. So non-citizens were voting, all in violation of Wisconsin law. Ballot chain of custody issues, going back to Georgia. The handling of drop box ballots last November in one of the state's strongholds, that's DeKalb County, which along with Fulton County was kind of the epicenter of Georgia election fraud. It seems that, people lost track of the ballots. How could that be? How could that be? Fulton County in Georgia. Georgia's hand-picked election monitor, okay, this is the largest voting district, by the way, in Georgia, documented 24 pages of mismanagement and irregularities during vote counting in November 2020. That included double scanning of ballots, insecure transport of ballots, violations of voter privacy, and on ad infinitum. By the way, the state government is looking to put Fulton County into receivership so that the state can take over running the elections for 2022. I hope they do it. Errant vote counting, back to Georgia again. Brian Kemp, the governor, kind of gagged me. Okay, the November 2020 election results in Fulton County, multiple reviews found three dozen significant problems with absentee ballot counting, duplicate tallies, math errors, transposed data. Remember, folks, we're not even getting into the machine part of this. Illegal exemptions from voter ID, back to Wisconsin. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has ruled that as many as 200,000 voters, 200,000 folks, the difference was 20,000 votes in Wisconsin, were allowed to illegally skip voter ID for absentee ballots by claiming they were indefinitely confined by COVID, but there was no legal authority to do that. The primaries in Texas just held. All you folks down there in Texas, Houston and Dallas, did you know that a Democratic operative forgot to count 10,000 ballots in the primary? That's 10,000 ballots. Okay. Yeah, you know, the Democratic Marxists are exactly right. Our elections, we are so fair. We are so just. We have no problems in our election system whatsoever, folks. Move right along. Don't believe your lying eyes. Here's a good piece of news for you. Ron DeSantis, I love him. He's standing up in Florida. He has asked the legislature for a $5.7 million budget to create an Office of Election Crimes and Security with 20 sworn police officers, and it was granted, and they will be operating in time for the November 2022 elections. In Georgia, the 240 ballot traffickers that I was telling you about, each of these traffickers was averaging 23 to 24 drops a night during the, you know, 3 or 4 nights of extended voting. You know, we all went to sleep and they're not counting anymore. Well, no, they weren't counting because they were dropping ballots to be counted later. Okay. Those 240 people were dropping 50 to 100 ballots into a drop box each time. The one guy that came forward, the whistleblower who's under protection, was paid $10 a ballot. He made $45,000 between November 3rd and the runoff. Two elections, 45 grand. Wow. Pretty good pay. Now multiply that, folks, by 240 people just like him, and then multiply the ballots. Roughly 4,500 ballots by each person in that 240-person group that went from drop box to drop box, dropping off manufactured ballots. I mean, here's what's really distressing. If this doesn't get your blood boiling, I don't know what will. 9 of 10 bills that have been filed in 6 different states, you know all the states, that seek to audit the 2020 election results, including 3 that would have nullified Biden's victory, have just, you know, fallen by the wayside as state legislative sessions wind down. Oh, well, we wouldn't want to be bothered with a little, you know, election fraud undermining the republic. No. I mean, we got other things to do. We got to go play golf or whatever we're going to do. Yes, 9 of 10. There's only one still alive, and that's barely by a heartbeat, and that's in Wisconsin. May I suggest that you start writing your state legislatures and tell them to, like, get on the stick? And the cheating starts before the elections now. It's called All on the Line, AOTL. As it's Eric Holder and Barack Obama. your friends Eric and Barry. Yes, you know, the head honcho and his wingman. They have a deal going, and they've actually been successful. They have wiped out 11 Republican seats in four states, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, all the key states. And what they're doing is they're attacking the districting plans of Republican state legislatures, which, by the way, is a right reserved to Republicans or Democrat state legislatures by the Constitution. What's really distressing is that the Supreme Court kind of ruled for the legislature in Georgia and ruled against the legislature in Pennsylvania and North Carolina. And of course, our good buddies, Eric and Barry, call this fair redistricting. By the way, in Wisconsin, the new redistricting plans, which determine, you know, who votes for whom and how many Republican and Democratic districts there are, was drawn up by Tony Evers, you know, the Democratic governor there. Oh, yeah, what could go wrong here? That's 11 seats. You think we're going to take back the House while these guys are running amok? And the Republican National Committee? I mean, where are they? Knock, knock. Anybody home? Let's get on these people, folks. You don't want to have the election stolen before we even have the election, do you? I actually get emails from all these people who think I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Democratic Marxist, I guess. Well, big surprise. Surprise! And you can't believe some of the write-ups in these. Quote, the fight to restore fairness in our democracy won't be solved by any one map, but it's important to remember that every win and loss can have a real impact. The movement for fair maps is a testament to the idea of progress that would not have been possible without everyone who has advocated for their communities at public hearings, submitted written testimonies, or bravely challenged gerrymandered maps in court. And it goes on and on and on. And, of course, the usual mantra about Republicans stealing votes, suppressing votes, et cetera, et cetera. This is really a big deal. Really a big deal that most people don't know about. I brought you this redistricting story about 6 or 8 months ago and told you these guys were going to be on it. Well, let me tell you, I'm getting fundraising emails from them 2 or 3 a day. So obviously they smell blood in the water, and like the Democratic Marxist sharks they are circling. Fins out of the waves. So what are we going to do about this undermining of our republic? About who's elected and mapping our international policy, which we've discussed in the historical story, and what to do about this rampant election fraud, which, of course, is just the big lie. Oh, yes, nothing going on here. Well, let me tell you what you can do. There is strength in numbers. Number one, you need to get organized, and this is the first step in how you do it, and you need to start right now. There is no tomorrow in this game of Save America. Identify your fellow band of freedom lovers. That's your family, your neighborhood, your community, your town, your city, your county. Meet in person as often as you have to. Screen your attendees so you don't have moles. Do not allow phones or recording devices or video devices in your meetings. Elect a leader, a secretary, and a treasurer. Determine your strengths and skills within your group. There should be somebody who is the most skilled in speaking and public representation, the most skilled in financial matters, the most skilled in organizational matters, any ex-military that you happen to have in terms of defense matters, technical and internet skills, anybody skilled or having contacts with governments for government liaison, anybody particularly skilled in coordination, particularly between your group and other groups like your groups. Anybody skilled in preparation and safety, particularly in the event of a disaster. And finally, anybody skilled in training and education. Get people who know that stuff into those positions to head those committees, if you will. You want to then identify your purpose and your mission, clearly, simply. And then you want to put together a calendar of events and divide up responsibilities to cover them, to influence them, to be involved in them. Education, politics, elections, whatever it happens to be. That is the first step in turning this heavily listing ship pitching about in wild seas that are intentionally made to swamp us. That is the first step in turning this ship around and in saving it from sinking, I might add. Next week, we're going to talk about more detailed matters under this outline I gave you. And remember, hit the Take Action tab on the website on therightsideradio.com, and this outline is there for you to follow. You need to get on this, like, right now. We needed to be on this 20 years ago, to be honest with you. And now let's do a little rat-a-tat-tat to wind up this show, which, wow, we're almost out of time already. You know, crumbling COVID. Oh, I'm melting. I'm melting. British Airways and Virgin Atlantic have become the first airlines to lift mask mandates. Good for them. I guess we're getting shown up by Canadian truckers and now British Airlines. Yeah, terrific. United Airlines has kind of walked back their vaccine mandate a little bit. They're now asking all their employees that were put on unpaid leave, who didn't have vaccines but had exemptions, to come back to work. We love you. Come back to work. You can get paid. Oh, we're so sorry about the vaccine mandate. You know, whatever. Then we have Senator, you know, the Democrats are just unbelievable. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, woo, and Elizabeth Warren. Ah, what a peach. They're working on a proposed new tax, folks, to save you money at the gas pump. It's going to target profits that are being reaped by oil companies at these high crude oil prices, which, of course, the Democratic Marxists, the party they belong to, are totally responsible for. And, you know, because they really don't understand economics or don't want to understand economics, and because they really don't care about you, they're going to levy taxes on these oil companies. And folks, economics 101, when you raise the taxes on a company, what happens? They pass it through to you. So this is going to result in even higher gas prices. Oh, what a terrific idea, just like all the rest of their ideas. It's like truly astounding. Holy smokes. And then we have progressive social justice activists. You know, they just abound. The whole cancel culture woke crowd. The Senate. This is great. Go Rand Paul. I love Rand Paul. The Senate voted Tuesday to repeal the CDC mandate requiring masks on public transportation, including airplanes. By the way, that was a 57-40 vote. There were 7 Democrats that voted with the Republicans. Gee, you think they smelled disaster in the upcoming elections? Yeah, I think so. And the only Republican, hey, you folks in Utah, Salt Lake City, mighty Kaya, Mitt Romney was the only Republican to vote against this. Where did you guys find this man? How did you elect this guy? Please remedy this situation in the next election, would you? For the good of the country and the good of Utah. Some poetic justice. A grand jury of all places in Boston have issued indictments against Monica Cannon Grant and her little hubby, Clark Grant. They're the founders of Violence in Boston, which is Black Lives Matter. Dozen charges, folks, for allegedly using the nonprofit for their own benefit. Gee, you know, a little corruption by the Democratic Marxists at Black Lives Matter. Who would have thought? I mean, I'm just astounded. I mean, I can barely get the words out. I'm so amazed. Well, anyway, they've been found to allegedly been involved in a series of schemes that defrauded all the Violence in Boston donors and the Massachusetts Department of Unemployment Assistance and a mortgage lending business based in Chicago. Gee, I wonder what will happen to them. California, okay? The California Department of Social Services. I'm not making this up. Are you guys worried about your kids at school? Listen to this one. They recently raided a San Diego preschool. We're talking about 1 to 3 year olds. And they interrogated these kids, which, by the way, is against the law. Not that that matters to Democratic Marxists. And the school was named the Aspen Leaf Preschool. They had informed parents that masks for their kids were optional. You know, it's up to the parents. Parents' choice. But no, not the California DSS. The kids were cornered. They were forced to answer questions, including who told them that they didn't need to wear masks. You know, those domestic terrorists, your parents. And the investigators cited the school with what's called a type A violation, which under California COVID standards, you know, crumbly COVID, that can be grounds for closing a institution permanently. Wow. Let me tell you about some nastiness involving kids, you know, your kids somewhere out there in the U.S. of A. Pete Buttigieg. And yeah, I know that's not how you pronounce his name, but it's so perfect. Buttigieg, don't you think? It's just, I just love it. Buttigieg's husband or wife or whatever. His name, by the way, is Chasten, C-H-A-S-T-E-N. He put on a talk, a presentation at a preschool, and he wore a t-shirt with the statement stenciled on the front, "Not your typical gay camp." And then he led the kids in a mock version of the United States Pledge of Allegiance, which included inserting the words "Heart of the Rainbow" and pledging allegiance to the gay lifestyle. You folks ought to go back and listen to my History of Education in the United States, the historical story. I think you'll find it quite interesting. And how about a little rat-a-tat-tat COVID crumble? You know, the crumbling of COVID. I'm melting! Of all places in Massachusetts, the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, and this is happening across the United States, by the way, and at the CDC level, they have now admitted that they're going to update its criteria for COVID deaths because, who would have known? If this was just not intentional, we just didn't know. They overstated COVID deaths. Oh, yeah. In fact, so far, they have reduced the number of COVID deaths reported by the state by 4,000 over the past year and a half, and the count is ongoing. You know, kind of like what your erstwhile hayseed here informed you of more than a year and a half ago. Yes, and of course, we know why the deaths were inflated, don't we? It's called fear. And what is fear for? It's called compliance. We are almost out of time on the right side. So let me tell you the rest of the story. There's not just incredible similarities between 1937 and 1940 and current times and in the same geographic region. There's not just the same geopolitical push by these tyrants to expand. But Russia is using the excuse of ethnic Russians in Ukraine, just as the Germans used the excuse of ethnic Germans in Czechoslovakia and Moldavia. There's false flags that are used by all these outfits to try and justify an attack or an invasion. There's ports, military, and commerce. Danzig, in the case of Germany, on the Black Sea, I might add. And Crimea, Sevastopol, in the case of Russia, on the Black Sea, I might add. And then you have Russia wanting the manufacturing and farming capabilities of Ukraine. You have Germany wanting the Czech military equipment and manufacturing capabilities of Czechoslovakia. You have China wanting the chip manufacturing in Taiwan. And then you have the territorial expansion ambitions. Russia reassembling the USSR, you know, Putin's greatest dream. Germany, Hitler actually used the words, "We need space for the German people." Just as China's defense ministers, and I brought you that speech, February 22nd, 2020 show, listen to it in the archives, "They need room for the Chinese." Yes, lots of similarities. History repeats if you let it, folks. And now, I want you to talk to each other. I want you to get organized. And I want you to look in that mirror and say it with grit and resolve. Talk to your family. I will muster. I will stand. I will not comply. I will never give in. I will never stop fighting. I will join with those in these United States and around the globe who love freedom as I do, and we will win. Thanks for listening. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Talk to you next week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.